Thanks very much. Thanks for coming along. Am I going to have to talk straight down to my shirt? No. thanks very much for coming along. M1 is closed. The football is on. The exams are in full swing. You had plenty of reasons not to be here, but you're here. Thanks very much for coming. That's good to see you. I was going to talk a little bit indeed about global governance, the mess we're in. Maybe I should say a few things first about what we actually understand by global governance, because it's not everybody's daily phrase. We're in a world with a lot of global problems. Yeah, we've got global environmental problems, global migration issues, global trade issues, various global conflicts, global security problems, global food issues, global energy problems, global communication strategies, and all kinds of other issues that have the word global in front of them. We're in a more global world. In a more global world, we need, or we get, whether we want them or not, more rules and regulatory processes that are supposed to bring more order, direction, stability, predictability to those global problems and challenges. But as I say, the mess we're in is kind of to suggest that maybe it's not as neat and orderly and stable and predictable and directioned as we might think. In fact, a bit of a mess. Global governance in two senses. Governance is about regulatory processes, about rules, about norms, about standards, about laws, and the institutions that formulate, implement, sometimes enforce them. So we've got regulatory problems, governance, got governance all over society. Some of that governance is global. You can think of the global in two ways. One is that it's global governance when the issues in question that are being governed are global. Global employment problems, global trade problems, global financial problems, and so on. The problems are global. It's also global governance, though, that some of the institutions and some of the rules are global in scale. So they might be United Nations, World Trade Organization, or whatever. So it's kind of global in those two senses, global problems and global rules and regulatory processes for those problems. That's kind of our global governance. Right, but the mess we're in is that this global governance is messy. You might have thought of global governance, I don't know, if you signed up, how many of you when you signed up to global governance thought, oh, this is going to be about the UN? Nobody. Wow, this is well, that's the end of the UN. Okay, well, you've obviously made the desired shift, so we don't need to. I want to ask you why you are here then, but what you imagine the global governance to be. But there is an older sense of global governance as international organizations. Yes, the United Nations system, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, and so on. Intergovernmental organizations, where nation states come together and collaborate to address various problems that go beyond their borders. Now, that's part of what global governance is about, but as you'll find, there's a lot more to it than that today as well. I want to suggest five ways that we are in what you could call a messy multilateralism. And you might want to relate these five ways to the different issues that you're looking at, too. So one of our messinesses is what you might call, we're not supposed to be jargon-filled academics here, transcalar problems, transcalar regulation, boo hiss, yeah, tomat potos fly. What I mean by this is that if you look at the way that governance used to work, it was very centered on one level, on one scale, the nation state, the country level, and that's where the rules came from. It was all from the country nation state level. Now if you look at global problems, the rules tend to come from multiple scales. You've got some global institutions, you've got some regional institutions, you've got national institutions, you also have subnational institutions, both provincial and local. So what you end up getting is that rules and regulatory processes for global problems are coming from all of these different places. So for example, if you take the food issue, you've got global institutions like the Food and Agricultural Organization, the International the World Food Program. You've got regional arrangements like the Mercosur or the Common Agricultural Policy in the European Union. You've got the national departments of agriculture doing their various bits. You've got provincial Canadian provinces or whatever, which are doing their bit on agriculture and food. And you have various local food banks and food schemes and so on that are operating locally. Now, so if you say, where is food governance? Where's the governance of global food security coming from? It's coming from all of those layers at the same time. And believe me, they're not talking to each other all the time. And they might be doing all kinds of different things. So when you get into a global financial crisis and you say, why isn't anyone doing anything? Well, it's partly because you've got global agencies doing certain things, you've got regional agencies doing certain things, you've got national governments and their ministries and finance and central banks doing certain things, and you've got even sometimes local currency schemes off on their own. So it gets messy as people are working across the layers. So that's one problem. Not a single layer, multi-layered. Second issue is that you probably, maybe you think of governance, and you're thinking government and nation state, and you're thinking governments, public sector. But the governance of global problems is often taking place outside the public sector as well. The public sector is part of it. Governments and intergovernmental organizations are part of it. But you've got a lot of private arrangements too. So take this financial problem. A lot of you probably looked at the financial crisis of recent times and think, it's a problem of regulation. There isn't enough regulation. Well, if you looked at public sector governmental rules and regulations for finance, then you might say, yeah, there's a bit of a deficit. There's not very much. But a lot of governance, lots of rules and regulatory procedures for finance, global finance, are coming from the International Accounting Standards Board, the accounting firms, the International Capital Markets Association, the Wolfsberg Group, Hedge Fund Standards Board, and so on can go on. There are lots, oodles and oodles of private regulatory arrangements alongside. And sometimes you've got also civil society. You think of the World Trade Organization, but a number of you probably go to your local supermarkets and pat yourself on the head as you take a fair trade bananas or something of that sort. The fair trade standards come from the World Fair Trade Organization, the Fair Trade Labeling Organization, civil society, non-governmental schemes. So some of the rules for global governance are actually private sector and civil society rules. And so when you're looking later on at who's governing the financial markets, who's governing the food, who's governing the trade and employment, don't ask only for the governmental organizations. Think about the non-governmental, private, commercial, and civil society groups. Okay, so that's the second difference. Transsectoral rather than being just public sector. Third problem, it's kind of come up already a little bit, is that you've got a very diffuse governance. Yeah, in olden days, you would say, okay, I want to have rules for, I don't know, finance or trade or whatever. I know where I'm going to go. I go to my parliament and I go to my national government. There's one place, and that's where I go to try and get things sorted out. But now, if you want to do something about climate change, you've got a choice. You can forum shop, as some people say. You might go to the United Nations. You might go to your national government. You might go to the EU. You might go to the Forestry Stewardship Council if you want to, you know, work with indigenous peoples and labor organizations and that sort of thing. Or you could go to Rio right now. And in Rio, you would find Rio de Janeiro with the Rio Plus 20 summit. And you would find thousands of seminars and workshops and institutions and initiatives all over the place. So it's very diffuse. It's very decentralized. Again, very messy. Could have a strength because it means that if you don't like what one person says, you can go somewhere else. In the old days, you went to your government. If you didn't like the government, you were stuck. Now you can subvert the government by going somewhere else. Okay, so that's a third difference, this decentralization, this diffusion. Fourth, messiness of this global governance today is that there's overlapping mandates. It used to be that, you know, every institution would more or less have its own place of work and its own agenda and its own mandate. Nowadays, again, you can go all over the. Look at what happened in the euro crisis at the moment. Look at all the people that are involved. Is it the European Central Bank, or is it the national government, or is it the IMF? All of them claim to have a say in this. You want to change banking regulation? Do you go to the IMF? Do you go to the Bank for International Settlements? Do you go to the Financial Stability Board or any number of other places? Overlapping mandates, not clear who's in charge.
Okay, and then the final point, then I'll hand over to James to talk about the non-traditional stuff a bit more. But final point, it's a big difference here, is, well, some of you IR types. Have we got international relations people here? Yeah. Okay, well, close your ears for a moment, because you probably won't like it. Sovereignty, forget it. An old principle was, you know, that there was a final, absolute, comprehensive, unilateral, supreme arbiter, supreme controller for governance. The buck stopped somewhere. But in this messy world, the buck is always passed. Yeah, there's always other places to go. There's no final decision point. And that again makes things very messy. And raises questions about who's accountable as well. Because there's always somebody else that you can pass the blame on to. And when there's a success, you've got tens of institutions that are ready to take the success. But as I say, on the whole in global governance, we don't have that many successes to crow about. And it's usually a question of how can we pass the blame to somebody else. The problem, of course, is that while we're busy passing the blame, the financial crises persist, the global warming gets worse, global employment issues get worse, the global trade regime runs to a standstill, and global food security remains imperiled. So I leave you with the problems and the messes, and hopefully my colleagues will help you to get out of it a bit.